We're talking with Whitley Strieber, famed author of Communion, who has both documented and spoken widely about his apparent contact with extraterrestrial non-human beings. His authenticity has been verified through numerous lie detector tests and medical examinations, as well as by investigative journalist Ed Conroy's report on Communion. Mr. Strieber presently attempts to help further authenticate the UFO phenomenon, his own experiences, and those of other contactees through his latest book, Confirmation, Hard Evidence of Aliens Among Us, available now from St. Martin's Press. First question I'd like to ask you, Whitley, is between Majestic and Breakthrough, you took a bit of a hiatus from the public eye and didn't seem to come forward very much with a lot of speaking about your experiences or new publications.
I quit in December of 1989 saying that I would not be back unless I had made some more progress of some kind, important progress. I didn't say what, but because I didn't know what it would be.
Mm-hmm.
But I then set conditions for the visitors that I would that had to be met for me to write another book. These conditions were so impossible that I figured I am out of this box now. They'll leave me alone and it's over. There had to be multiple witness encounters at my cabin, which could be verified. I wanted to go on an abduction and see what it was like and see what was being done and be able to follow up with the people that this was done on.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted, there were a lot of things. I enumerated a whole group of them in Breakthrough. Over those years that I was silent, one by one, the visitors, they did each one of these things. And at the time, I was in a state, in a space where I was not even sure that this was real at all. I thought it was maybe all a mental thing, and then I proceed to end up going on an abduction, not only going on one, but to the home of people I knew.
Was that the Dora Ruffner experience?
Dora Ruffner experience, yeah. Dora was living here in Boulder at the time, and it was a stunner. And I saw things done to her daughter, and I saw the way her daughter changed, and I saw the way she and her boyfriend and the whole family reacted to this, how the suppressed memories of it worked in their personalities. It was an astonishing experience to see this, and the thing that was changed in the girl was so profound. I mean, it was so extraordinary. And I still know them. Dora is still one of my dearest friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed, she's married. She and Ed Conroy are married. And so I know them very. I'm goddaughter to the little girl that this happened to. And I mean, I'm godfather to the little girl that this happened to. She's my goddaughter. We're very close, and I'm almost like an uncle. And she obtained from her experience a sense of focus and determination that had really not been in her personality before. And she's an absolutely amazingly powerful person. She has a tremendously dynamic spirit, this girl does.
Mm-hmm. Was this experience, when you had been allowed to view this abduction, was this something that you communicated with Dora, or did she not know about it until the publication of Breakthrough?
Well, I was very careful about that because, you know, on the one hand, if my impulse was as soon as I got home from this, and you understand how what high level strangeness we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I was in upstate New York, okay, and I go to Boulder in the middle of the night in about 30 seconds. In my pajamas, and I see all of this stuff happening. It's so bizarre, it's beyond belief. Then I'm returned to the house, and I end up staggering on the deck beside the swimming pool, feeling very dirty and extremely confused about where I was and what was going on, with vivid memories of being inside a UFO and the whole thing. I mean, it was my first impulse was to call Dora and just to see if they were okay. You know,
mm-hmm.
When I saw last had seen Dora during this experience, she was lying on her bed, just jerking, and the little girl was screaming in the basement, and Dora could not move out of the bed. And it was very, very upsetting to me because I didn't call her because I have to tell you that I was about 80% sure it was all just a big nightmare of mine, and I didn't want to get, you know, involve these wonderful people in my dumb stuff.
Right.
So I did not call her, and I think I was right not to. I've never been sure that actually happened. There have been certain things that I go into in Breakthrough that suggest it might have happened. But Dora never said, yeah, I remember it. The little girl has never said, this happened.
Sure.
And I've certainly never questioned her about it. I never intend to.
But, of course, you didn't come forward with your childhood memories until just recently with the secret school. So
right.
you understand from firsthand experience how it could be possible that all of
sure.
these are embedded
well, there's
deeply.
A couple of cases in my son's life where friends that he had when he was in grade school are coming back to him and saying, hey, do you remember what happened to us at the cabin, et cetera? And some of them are real upset about it, and they're just now sort of beginning to remember things. But fortunately, at the time those things happened, they told either one person or another about it, so there's some traces, at least. In this child's case, there are no traces. She never mentioned anything. I'm still 50-50 on it. I mean, maybe it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm just weighing, you know, Dora was very kind to give me an interview for Breakthrough and to use her name in it, and it's seems to me quite likely that she hasn't the faintest idea faintest idea about any of this. She's very skeptical about all this UFO stuff, Dora is. She doesn't, she's too sweet and polite to ever say it to my face, but I think that she echoes my wife's opinion that it's probably nonsense. My wife's never seen a thing.
Really?
No, never a thing.
But your son has. And
my son has. Everyone in the family has, except my wife. Even the cats had.
Right.
Then didn't. And I think she sort of resents it a little bit. I mean, that's, you know,
she's being left out.
She's being left out. You know, she says I don't want to be the fallback guy. I don't want to be the person
right.
who holds you up. If there's going to be an adventure, I want to be on it.
Right. Exactly.
So,
well, let's move on now to more recent issues with Confirmation. What do you think are some of the elements in the new book that help it be a substantial documentation of hard evidence, and I'd also like to discuss how you differentiate that from proof.
Okay, well, evidence suggests, proof confirms. That's essentially the difference.
Okay.
There's not proof here, because there's no the scientific community needs to give us proof. I call it confirmation because it's confirmation in my mind. But I also call it evidence because there has never been a scientific paper written about the significance of implants and giving any theories about why they are in the bodies of people and so
mm-hmm.
on and so forth. I'm very much afraid that there will be papers about this saying that it's all nonsense and doing the usual kind of filtering that the scientific culture has been doing on this and sort of ignoring all of the mysteries in favor of glib answers.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that doesn't keep happening because right now, because of that, because of the way the culture of science treats this, because of the way the media, primarily the print media, treats this, and because of the lack of confirmation from authorities, we're totally passive. As a society, we're passive. This is just going to happen to us however it happens, however whoever is doing it wants it to. And boy, if I was out there, an alien, and I was engaged in something that involved putting objects and implements in the bodies of the species that we were studying or doing whatever we're doing to it with, I would have a military operation that penetrated the culture of that species and made sure that my presence remained a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways I would do that would be by spreading denial and disinformation and making sure that anybody who came out and talked about it in a serious way was laughed off the stage.
Which is exactly what happens.
That's what happens. And so, you know, people say to me, well, is there a government conspiracy of silence? I don't really think so. I think there's a visitor conspiracy of silence, though. And the only way we're ever going to break that is by taking up the debris and that we can find, treating seriously the side effects in the lives of close encounter witnesses so we can understand them and so forth,
mm-hmm.
then we will be able to turn this evidence into proof and also come to understand what these darn implants are.
Mm-hmm. Right. I have a question just kind of connecting with the whole government conspiracy idea that you're talking about. Do you suppose that it's possible that a lot of the conspiracy theories about government alliances with extraterrestrials could possibly be just plants by the government themselves to try to help people feel like they still maintain some level of authority?
Well, I would guess that probably would be what they are. And they may be more than just that. They may even be fantasies on the parts of people who are inside the system and know something is going on and just wish they had more control over it than they do.
Mm-hmm.
I think my guess is the government is largely clueless, and that if there is knowledge about this, it's isolated in the intelligence community, and it's the secrecy is maintained illegally, because I'm pretty sure that the Congress and the White House don't know anything about it. Of course, I could be fooled, but I have a feeling they don't.
You know, what I think is interesting is just kind of the recent spate of films that have come out and have kind of given us this picture that there are these high-level intelligence people that really know all about it, you know, and they're put in a humorous light, but
yep.
The whole idea is that it trickles down into the sense that someone here in, you know, the Men in Black or, you know, the guys that do the X-Files or whatever it is, that someone here knows what's going on, and that we sort of have control of what's going on, and we're aware of what's happening, and that we are either in contact with these alien visitors, or in some way there's some sort of cooperation going on, and it seems to be putting out this idea that that's okay, that everything's all right, and that you know, somebody is handling it for us.
Maybe it is okay. Maybe it's fine, but please, I would like to decide that for myself, since I'm the one of the people with an implant in them.
Right. Right. So can we talk about that a little bit? I understand that in your book you talk about an implant that you tried to have removed from your ear and a team that demonstrates some type of self-preservation intelligence
self-preservation response rather than intelligence. It didn't necessarily act in an intelligent manner. But it certainly did respond as if it was programmed to do so. It was really a pretty amazing experience, especially coming on the heels of all of the other incredibly bizarre things that I remember over the past 10 years in my life, like the Dora incident. The fact that this thing is there and that it's so strange suggests to me that maybe the other weird stuff that I remember is all true too. Whoa, that's really heavy stuff. Boy. Okay, let's tell you the story of this thing. It came into my ear, I think, in May of 95. I think it was put in there by people. I saw people in the room when it was happening. In 96, late in 95, we had a major financial meltdown, and we lost the cabin and everything, and it was horrible, and I didn't have any time to think about this. Then in 96, I heard about Roger Lear's implant removals that he was doing out in Ventura, California, which are reported extensively in the book. Quite amazing stuff, and I got to thinking about this. Maybe I could get this thing out. Maybe it would be some hard evidence, and I know that the hard evidence is out there. I've always known that. That's just a question of getting it.
Right.
So I went to a doctor and gave him a little white lie. He knew about communion. It wasn't a secret to him, but I didn't get him involved in the whole implant issue. I just said it's a little lump in my ear and it's bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt it and said, oh, it's probably a little cyst. It's nothing serious. I've seen many things like this. He said, I'll just take it off for you. And he gave me some lidocaine and sat me down in surgery. Anne was making a video of it, by the way, which is really interesting. I'm very glad we kept that record. He finds it's fixed in the ear. You know, it's very tightly fixed in this one place. And so he opens up a little incision over it, dissects into it a little bit. He says, he pauses, he looks at it for a while, and says it's a white disc integrated with the cartilage. So he tries to dissect the disc out. And when he touches it with his scalpel, he gets a little corner of the disc, but the disc moves away. And there's some surprise in that little surgery, I can tell you. And it moves, it touches it again with the scalpel, and it moves quite a distance down in my ear. So he says, you know, you're not going to believe this. He puts a glove on my hand, and he has me feel my ear, and the thing is almost an inch down from where it had been before. So he says, I would have to maim you. I'd have to take this whole ear apart if I was going to get this out, so I want to close the incision. And he closes the incision. The little piece that we got, we send to a lab, and it turns out to be collagen filled with crystals of calcium carbonate. Strange. I mean, collagen, calcium, and carbon are all in the human body, but they certainly aren't
like that.
I mean, it's not a disease. It's something else. A few days after the incision, after the sutures are removed, my ear suddenly burns like fire, and I practically go through the ceiling. The pain subsides, and the object is back where it started from. It has moved back to its original position, where it is now. The doctor says, after the surgery, he said, you mean to tell me that this was an alien implant and I have broken it? What's going to happen to me? I said, John,
that's a good question.
Get ready to take a ride. Nothing has happened to him is the answer. And I bring up that story because it's important in the context of this to remember. I'm perfectly healthy. In fact, I'm very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any other implant witnesses with implants who have suffered physically from this. We don't really know what these things are. I'm certainly not under mind control. I probably wouldn't be in here.
Sure.
I'd be in here saying, these implants are nothing special. It's just nonsense cooked up by UFO investigators. Instead of screaming and yelling and pounding my fist and saying, this has got to be looked at. Hey, this is real. Don't be crazy on me. The scientific community has got to look at this. The government's got to change its attitude about this.
Right.
The press has got to change its attitude. I want the whole culture to change. That's why I'm out here screaming about this. This is serious business. These things don't belong in the human body. It's us this is happening to.
Right.
Could be you. Absolutely. I don't know if you've got one or not.
You're right.
Yeah.
And you know, what you're saying about the attitude needing to change, it appears that, especially in the last week or so, and of course since the publication of your book, that the Vatican's position has changed on this somewhat, or at least Monsignor Balducci has come forward. I know he was just on Art Bell this past week, but I didn't catch any of the interviews, so I'm not clear exactly what happened with that. Are you aware of that, or can you tell us at least about the afterword in your book?
Well, the afterword in my book is from Monsignor Balducci, and it is basically an interview that was given to Michael Hesseman, a German UFO researcher. And Michael was privileged to get this interview. Monsignor Balducci is a member of the Congregation for the Propagation of the Faith, and he is a demonologist and the former exorcist for the Archdiocese of Rome. And he, in the interview, states unequivocally that this hasn't got anything to do with demons. It's something else.
Right.
He gives the theological grounding why a Christian is perfectly free to think that this has to do with creatures from another world, that the universe is filled with many more things than the fundamentalists believe. It's not just angels, demons, and human beings. That's arrogant to think that.
Mm-hmm.
It's putting yourself in God's place, that it's probably populated with vast numbers of different types of creature. It's quite a wonderful interview, actually, and it focuses on the theological significance of this, and as far as he's concerned, people with religious beliefs, their beliefs are not going to be challenged or destroyed by this in any way. Absolutely not. On the contrary, it increases the glory of God as far as he's concerned, as far as he says. I did not know, incidentally, that he had been on Art Bell. It surprises me.
Right. Yeah, it was either Monsignor Balducci or one of the press folks for the Vatican, and I'm not really sure what the context was, but I know it was coming forward to speak in regards to this publication that you've just put out. So it might just be an assumption on my part that it was Monsignor Balducci. I only heard about it.
English.
Okay, yeah, I only heard about it secondhand. Mm-hmm. So it might have just been one of the press people who came forward to.
Because it would be strange that if any press person from the Vatican would come forward, because this is not an official Vatican statement
sure.
at all. Maybe it was just to deny that it was official, because it's,
that could have been it as well. And it could have been a reaction to
nonsense on the internet about that. I make it quite clear in my book that it's not an official statement.
Now, wasn't there something related to that where Monsignor Balducci says something about the idea of questioning human testimony?
Yes,
and the
he
idea
does.
Of yeah.
He says he says essentially, why are we kidding ourselves? There's so much testimony. Some of this must be real. And he says, he speaks about the unwisdom of questioning human testimony on this scale, because you have to say that millions of people are just stupid or nuts. And if he says, if we question testimony on like that, then we're going to end by bringing all kinds of testimony into question, including the very small amount of testimony upon which the Christian faith rests.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so he feels it's dangerous to question testimony so indiscriminately.
And he makes a good point.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We've got about 7 minutes left here. So I'd like to talk a little bit more about some more things, specifically about your perceptions. What are your opinions about why the visitors are here? Do you have any guess as to why they select abductees the way they do and what their intentions are?
I have no way to talk about why they select abductees and what their intentions in that respect may be, except to look at it from our own perspective. If we had discovered another planet in which there were people who were much simpler and more primitive than us, if we say it was 500 years from now and we were flitting around among the stars successfully, that we hadn't somehow or another gone extinct, but instead had really made some progress.
Sure.
Then what would we be doing? Well, first of all, our anthropologists would be absolutely forbidding us to reveal ourselves any more than absolutely necessary for two reasons. One would be, if the moment we revealed ourselves, the whole culture would change irrevocably and would no longer be itself. It would be something directed toward us. Number two, we would be in danger of disempowering the culture and destroying its novelty, thus destroying our reason for even wanting to study and understand it. And they might end up becoming technological beggars, like so many indigenous cultures did when the technological West arrived in the 19th century. So secrecy would be number one, prime directive. The second thing that we would be doing would be to try to understand these people, and that might be really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Because look how much trouble we're having understanding the dolphins.
Sure.
And they're after all, an earthly species. So there would be a struggle there, and we would be starting at the grounding of that we would be looking at them genetically to try to understand how they ticked. Inevitably, we would be examining sexual material, because that's where the genetic information is concentrated. We would want to understand their physical bodies. We would, and especially if we found that they were in trouble somehow, that they didn't understand, like their environment was disintegrating, we would want to be able to help to deflect them from that dangerous path without revealing ourselves. And we might start doing all kinds of odd backflips in order to accomplish that. We might try to affect the way their culture functioned in subtle ways, maybe by using implants that made subtle changes in a small number of people or even a fairly large number that would have the net effect of altering the way the culture functioned. In other words, we might do to these people everything that is being done to us, and always with the best of intentions.
Very interesting. Do you think, based on some of the writings in The Secret School, and of course you have some moments of prophecy that you document towards the end of the book, do you feel like we're on a cataclysmic bent with what's happening with the planet, and do you think that that's part of the reason that we have an intervention with these other peoples?
We're in trouble. We're in major, major trouble. Much more trouble than we were in even a year ago. The Antarctic situation is extraordinarily serious.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the Larsen Ice Shelf and some of the other ice shelves are melting. In and of itself, that's not a much of an issue, but because the ice that's there is already floating, so it's not going to increase the sea levels or anything.
Mm-hmm.
The problem would be in that regard if shelf ice, I mean if continental ice slid into the sea, And that would, of course, increase the sea levels. If enough of it slid in, it would be dramatic.
Right.
The problem, though, is that the reason that ice is melting is the Antarctic Ocean is warming. As the temperature differentials between the tropics and the Arctic regions become less and less, the circulation of the ocean declines because it depends on those temperature differentials mm-hmm. for the strength of the currents. You could end up in the ironic situation where global warming causes the Gulf Stream to stop flowing as far north as it does now and then to start dissipating in the Bay of Biscay, say, in which case global warming causes Scotland to become like Lapland and England like northern Norway in a matter of one or two seasons.
Right.
I guess that's probably why there's a team of British scientists down in the Antarctic
studying that right now.
Exactly.
So we're in meltdown.
Right.
I mean, we are in the middle of a crisis that is going to start affecting us economically. I'll tell you something. Everyone talks about the fabulous bull market. I just accidentally ended up with this investor's newspaper today. They all wondering, what will end the bull market? I'll tell you. The environment is going to end the bull market. That's what will end the bull market, because one of these catastrophes is going to rise up out of nowhere all of a sudden someday in the next 5 to 10 years, and you're going to see an extraordinary meltdown of the world economy at that point.
And do you really believe that that's part of the reason that the visitors are interacting with us right now in the way that they are, or do you think that they're really just doing their own thing and this just happens to
coincide?
Yeah.
I think that what's happening is we are noticing them. I wouldn't be surprised to find that they've been around here longer than we have.
Mm-hmm.
And the mind of man, everyone listening to this, everyone who picks this up off the internet, you guys, me, we all know all of this exactly, precisely. We know the script. On some level that we're not in touch with. We're getting in touch with that level, and it looks like the curtains of ignorance are parting, when actually what's happening is we're coming into touch with parts of ourselves that are far more functional than this highly filtered organism that we call consciousness, that has sort of been educated along certain lines that we've all agreed are probably true. There's a wild, wild creature down inside every one of us. What's waking up is the wildness of mankind. And because it's waking up because it wants to save itself, because it loves life much more than we do.
Those are pretty powerful words.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard to have a question to follow that up with.
Well,
Since we are right about at our closing time, I guess the last question really we should ask is, out of all these fantastic experiences you've had, what is the most important thing that you've learned?
Did I have an implant in my ear? I'm serious. I'm really serious, because this is a culture that depends on physical evidence. This is what we use as our signal for change. Okay, here's a signal. Let's change.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Whitley.
You're welcome.